श्री राम जय राम जय जय राम ओम श्री राम जय राम जय जय राम ओम श्री राम जय राम जय जय राम Victory to God, victory to the light. God bless you. God bless devotional centers everywhere. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. It's wonderful to be able to just drop you. Are you all right? You survived that all right?
We're okay.
Okay, good. That was a tough drop.
Yeah, it's a little test.
No whiplashes, no concussions, good. The wonderful thing about our teachings is the notion that truths are truths wherever you find them to be. And so I want to read from the Master's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. It's the beginning of chapter 15. And in it is talking about Purushottama. If you're at the ashram, they'll talk about Purushottama Papa. And Puru is the light of God. It is a transcendent nature. And it is both the transcendent nature and the immanent nature of God. It is the universal vision that Papa talks about. And so this chapter in the Gita is talking about that. We have such refined philosophy from 5,000 years ago and further back than that. Tremendous realization that has not changed with the times. The language has changed. Culture has changed. But the truth remains the same. So Master here talks about the tree of life. It's mentioned in many scriptures of the world, including the Bible. That is the human body and human mind. In the light of intuition, yogis behold the inverted tree of consciousness, ideational components of the causal body. Within the tree of life force, the nadis of the astral body, channels of the life energy. These two existing interlocked within the inverted tree of the physical, cerebral, spinal, nervous system. So what Master is saying here is that it exists in the physical body, it exists in the astral or the energy body, and it also resides in the causal or the idea body. And you have all three of these as different sheaths that are within your spine. And as you go deeper, you begin to discover these more subtle bodies within this body. As Sri Yukteswar described, the brain at the top of the head is seen not as the top of the tree, but as the roots of the tree. And that the nerves within the roots of this tree become receptive to the higher frequency vibrations that come from the cosmic source. So it feeds from the cosmic source, and it feeds in through the roots and down through the brain, that the spine is like the trunk of the tree. And so the life energy, like sap, runs down through this trunk of the tree. And then all the afferent and efferent nerves run out from there, and those are the branches of the tree. The fruits of the tree are the experiences that we have in the physical, causal, and astral bodies that are distributed through this tree, the tree of life right within you. Physical scientists look at this body and they think, this body is what manufactures intelligence and life, because we eat food, because we drink, because we get sunlight. This body lives. But the yogis look at it differently. They think out of cosmic energy and consciousness comes all creation, including man. And it is true that man has a physical body and must have a physical body to interact in this material plane. But that the source of that body, the source of its creation, comes from beyond physical sources. That physical sources are actually a result of spiritual energy and not the cause of the intelligence of mankind. So this is an absolutely opposite point of view than most physical scientists take of how we come about and how we are invested in this body. That this body is not the source of life. It is the result of life. So Master goes on here. The phenomenal spheres were created by God by the condensation of light. Projected out of divine vibration, the earth came into being as inert matter. Its inherent life kept on thrusting its rays of life force forward. The rays became manifested in the form of vegetation and trees and with the extending shoots. These same patterns are repeated throughout nature. Like the plant kingdom, all forms of animate matter have a core of life whence branches extend to create and enliven the organism. Thus, after the Lord has enabled the earth to project trees, he fashioned human beings, the crowning creation, much like inverted trees. This correspondence is seen in the physical body's roots of hair, cerebral spinal trunk, boughs of arms and legs, and nerve branches extending throughout and distributing the sap of life. In a book on anatomy, at a chart showing the nervous system in the human body, turn the chart upside down with the brain below and the feet above, and you will see that man's form has similarity to an inverted tree on the trunk and many branches. So this also gives meaning to when Jesus was crucified on a cross, that he was that tree that was he was being nailed to. And in that case, he was being nailed to this dual experience in the body. And that the cross at that time simulated a tree. In the book on then turn the chart right side up, and you will see that the nervous system itself looks like an inverted tree, with the hair, brain, spine above, and numerous branches of nerves shooting out below. As trees spring out of the soil beneath them, the human tree of thought, life force, and nerves grows invertedly down from the soil or ground of cosmic consciousness. In the human body, the physical tree of nerves is the gross manifestation of the astral tree of life energy within. The two trees of nerves and life force are condensed out of the tree of human consciousness. The elemental ideas in the causal body, which in turn emanate from the cosmic consciousness. So we get here that first came cosmic consciousness. First God was, and complete and whole in himself. And then God, as his nature is, as our nature is, chose to express himself. He expressed himself out as this entire cosmos. Imagine being able to breathe out, so to speak, and have spring into creation the vast stellar systems and space and everything that's contained within it. It first came as an idea. Now, if you are an architect and you are thinking about a building, you first have an idea of what you would like that building to look like, what kind of functions you would like it to fulfill. And out of that come more and more distinct plans, and then you set pencil to paper, or today you sit down with your computer, and you begin to design that building. And that is like the astral. It's the energy that's being put into it. It's not yet a material creation. But it's taking on design. It's taking on form. Now, the astral creates with a kind of light that is much more subtle than what we have here in the material nature. Things themselves are filled with life energy and light. And so even something that is dark will be formed from light. And everything is emanating that. It's just formed with a dark light rather than a brighter light. And out of that comes any form of creation that you wish. And as Sri Yukteswar describes in the astral realms, you can go to any tree and ask that tree for a fruit. You can go to a peach tree and ask for an apple, and that peach tree will manifest an apple. Because it's not encumbered by the same limitations that material trees do have here. Everything is much more fluid. Everything is much more responsive to thought. And it's a reason why some people have such a difficult time adjusting to this material realm. They have it so firmly embedded in their minds of what it was like in the astral realms, that life was each easier, it was more responsive. There is more equality. You weren't subjected to bullies, because if you did not have a bullying kind of personality, those beings were excluded from where you lived. And so you didn't have to encounter that. So we get such rough and tumble play here. And for some people, it's very, very difficult to adapt. And to some things, we don't particularly care to adapt to. So there we are. And yet we live in this physical realm. And we find that there are not limitations. There may be a limitation of a jail where someone who is behaving very badly is subject to for a while. But we mix with all kinds of people. And there's a purpose, there's a reason for that. It is to help universalize our vision. That when everything is smooth on the outside, then you don't necessarily turn inwardly. It's not that all astral beings are enlightened, not at all. They are more refined, but they're not necessarily enlightened. When we come to this material plane and we have to deal with so many different kinds of people and personalities, then we are forced to go within, because the outside doesn't reflect the nature that we're looking for. And so we find God is complete and whole right inside of us. And this is the great lesson for coming into this material realm. No matter how good we have it, or how good we think we might have it in some future time, it's so easy to project into the future how perfect life will be. And then we get along at a certain point and we see that things haven't gone as smoothly, as perfectly as we had liked it. And we suffer disappointment. As long as we take that disappointment and we turn it within, we see, aha, I was fooled by this. When I was of a younger age, I used to listen to more pop music and rock music. And at that time, there's music generally falls into one of two realms. It's either You Done Me Wrong song or it's a love song. And if it's a You Done Me Wrong song, I turn that into That's Maya. I got fooled once again. And I had done me wrong. And I had disappointed, maybe heartbroken because of it. Or it's a love song, and I would make it a love song for God. And so in this way, I was looking to transmute everything that came to me as a means to help me to propel forward. It's so easy to get sidetracked on a vertical plane. If you think of yourself as going horizontal, a horizontal plane, I should say. It's so easy to get hooked onto a horizontal plane. you think of a horizontal plane, it's just all out there flat in front of you, and that's what this material creation is like. But the vertical takes you up. It's transcendent. And it takes you beyond the things of the senses, beyond the things of the body. And we have to exist in this material realm. So we have to render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's. We have to give it its due. But really, we should keep our focus on that which takes us up. That which transcends the things of time and space, of the senses, of relationships that we look to form here on this material plane. Now, we still are engaged in relationships here, but really, our focus should be on God and putting God first. If we don't put God first, if we put the things of the senses, if we put human desires first, then it'll yield a certain outcome. And of course, we always think that it's going to yield us happiness in the moment. But in the long run, it doesn't turn out that way, because we haven't listened to God. Sometimes God will fulfill everything that we could possibly want. But at the same time, there are other times when he can take away absolutely everything. Everything that we hold near and dear in a human sense. And to be unafraid. To know that God always wills something good for us. That we have this tree of life inside of us. And in that tree of life is the fulfillment of everything that we yearn for. As Sri Yukteswar says, it fulfills all of the heart's desires. We don't know that in the beginning. We're mixed. Some part of us thinks that I want to reach out for things of this world. And another part thinks I'm tired of this world. And I want something better. I want something higher. And back and forth we go. And those are the two thieves that are on the cross, or this tree of life that's inside of us. One part of us yearns for heaven and wants to go beyond. Another part wants to return back into the material realm. And it's up to us each moment what we choose. What do you choose? Do you choose that which takes you above, transcends? Or do you become fixated on the things that will keep you limited to the things of this world? These are choices that we make every single day. And so Master continues here, the tree of life has three kinds of leaves, or receptors, through which the indwelling soul receives knowledge. The Vedic hymns of the triune phenomenal creation, sensations, life force, and thought perceptions. The metaphor of leaves compared to a Vedic hymn calls forth an image of sensitivity and vitality, the vibrant green leaves denoting life, and whispering motion, hymns of knowledge, the rustle of leaves. You know, life can become so subtle, so beautiful, and the very thoughts that you have can feel like a symphony. A symphony coming from God. You know, this intelligence of God is really something. We can marvel at the things that mankind thinks up. But the things that God thinks up are far more than ever man ever thought. Far more refined, far more beautiful, far more uplifting. God is thinking thoughts through you right now. But most of us are dullards. Most of us have not attuned our minds to this subtle idea that God is beaming to us constantly. When you get quiet inside, listen to the intelligence of God. You can't force it. You can't manufacture it. You can't make it happen in that sense. But what you can do is do everything in your power to set the stage, to be a listening post for that divine emanation coming to you. Now, it may come in something that you have very well known for a very long time. It may come, for instance, about the beauty of life, or about the nature of divine love. And in a way, if you try to tell somebody about it, it'll sound quite ordinary. It doesn't reflect the subtlety and the beauty and the uplifting power that that divine thought can have. It may not be hardly a thought at all. It's just simply a realization, a state of being that comes to you. And it's so refined, it's so beautiful, that it almost doesn't belong to this earth. And yet, you receive it. The leaves in your consciousness begin to vibrate with that subtle thought. And it's so beautiful, it's difficult to describe. And that's why for some people, focusing on the astral, which looks a little bit more like Earth, but much more refined, much more beautiful, is easier to relate to than the causal. But the causal is absolutely magnificent. And you can feel it tingling in the top of your brain. Your brain scintillates to this divine thought coming to you. And then it lifts you up, and it lifts you outside of yourself. And you are in this transcendent zone where there is nothing but you and God, and really there is only God. And it is God who is revealing things to you, showing you the true nature of the self, which may be things in creation, it may be things far beyond this creation. And you thrill to every thought, every realization, every unfoldment that comes to you from God. And you can sit for an eternity, reveling in this unfoldment of what God does inside of you. Do you see how beautiful this is? How perfect it is? And this is what we're missing when we're not really going the spiritual way. When we're not really putting ourselves 100% toward God. We put ourselves towards this world, and we miss out on these things. Now, it doesn't always come just in a day. But not to get discouraged, not to get dissuaded, that you know what you're about, and you're focused upon that goal. And you don't become of two minds, you are of one mind. And you're absolutely focused on where you're going. When you sit down to meditate, don't just think, oh, well, I have this half an hour, 45 minutes, 1 hour that I'm going to meditate, and then I'm going to get up. It's just become a routine kind of a thing. Think of yourself as sitting down before all eternity, and you think, okay, God, what have you for me today? What have for you in this moment to reveal to me? And then you can't make it happen, as I said before. You can't manufacture it, but you can open yourself to it. And be excited about it in the sense that it's right there. You're standing right at the portal. And it's up to God to take you through the portal and which portal He chooses to take you through. And it can be just the simplicity of the moment. And it just reveals itself to you, and you say, life is perfect, just as it is, just as it is. And you are immersed in that experience in that moment. And it's not as if anything in a radical sense has been revealed to you, and yet it's the most radical idea you can possibly imagine, that life is perfect. It's blissful. It's joyful. It's exactly as God intended it to be. And you are that. You are that. You see how beautiful that is, how perfect that is. You teach yourself to fall in love with God. It's so easy to love the things of this world because they're tantalizing to us. They're around us all the time. But to teach yourself the subtlety of falling in love with God. Lord, I only want to be with you. I want to be immersed in you. I want to join with you. I want you playing as a blissful being throughout my entire sense of self. I want your thoughts to be thinking through my mind. I want your perfect, pure life energy running through this body, animating it. I want your vibration to go out through my words. I want you through and through and through. And I want to be so immersed in you that you are the one thing that is unchangeable in my life. You are the one constant that is always coming to me. And through you, I know all of life. All of life. Because God created everything that is. As Mother said, when you're in business with God, you're in business with all of life. And that puts you on the hero's journey. The hero is one, a spiritual hero, sets out from what is known and goes out into a greater world. He goes out in search of something beyond himself, a higher ideal, something that will add to his community when he has accomplished his journey. And so as a spiritual being, you set out from the known into the unknown, from the imminent into the transcendent. And you don't know where it's going to take you. You don't know what's going to happen, but you know that you must do this. That life would be shallow and incomplete if you were not to do this. And so you set out on that hero's journey. And if it be God's will, when you join and merge with him, perhaps he sends you back as he sent Mother back. And as Mother told the story, she repeated Ramakrishna's story of a doll that was made out of salt. It was hardened salt, and you'll see those at times, called a salt doll. And the salt doll grew curious one time, as Ramakrishna told the story. And it wanted to know the depth of the ocean. And of course, as soon as it entered into the ocean, it dissolved into the ocean. There is no longer a salt doll to know, except that it had expanded and become one with the ocean. And that's where Ramakrishna left the story, but Mother took it up from there. And she said in her case that the ocean once again wanted to express itself as the salt doll, and formed the salt doll to its bosom and delivered it onto the shores to tell one and all that life is God and God is life. And so Mother came back to tell us about a refined version of God. You know, so many people who don't believe in God or are having an argument with God have not really refine their version of what God is. If we are sincere, if we really want to seek for the truth, then we will leave behind old notions that are too small to encompass a universal God. Everybody's notion of what God is a reflection of their own consciousness. And so some people set up a God that is very human-like. And they will give it human kind of qualities. It is a jealous God. It is a fearful God. It is an angry God. And so on. You would think he is a very bad father figure. And it's because people are projecting onto God something that is inside of themselves. They have not yet realized the beauty of God, the love of God, the light of God. They're an in-between stage. Now sometimes somebody, a realized master, may say God is a jealous God. And they can say that from a state of realization. It doesn't mean that God is jealous like a human being would be jealous. What would he be jealous of? There's nothing. He's everything. He has everything. But he's a jealous God in this sense, that when we're on our spiritual path, he wants our attention glued to him. And if our attention wanders off, it is like having a radio and your fingers start twiddling with the dial and you get off the channel that you've been listening to and now you're getting static. And when your mind wanders away from God, it starts to get the static of this world and you can get confused and you can get lost. So realize, Master might say, that God is jealous in this sense. You must keep your mind finely and highly attuned to Him. And when you do, then you'll find that you'll stay on the God channel. That you'll feel those feelings of bliss and upliftment. That the ideas that God is thinking will be flowing through your mind. That His life energy will be flowing through your body. You'll have all of it. Because you're so highly attuned, you get around masters such as Mother and such as Master, such as Papa and others, who really have it, really have it. And you'll feel that God naturally flows through them. And they don't have to make a concerted effort in order for God to be there. God is always there. It's part and parcel of their being. And just a glance, just a touch, just a word can be enough to change a receptive soul forever. And if a soul is not receptive, not tuning itself to the God channel, then it just doesn't sound like anything at all, nothing much of interest. Somebody can read the scriptures about Jesus or Krishna or Rama, and maybe they just simply see a story. Or maybe they see a couple of morals that they think are good things. But they don't really see the truth behind it. They're not really inspired to change their lives. In fact, maybe they're inspired to turn away from it. People become polarized to the light. They seek the darkness. It's like taking a worm out of the earth and putting it on the sidewalk and out in the sun. And that earthworm will squirm and roll and till it makes its way back into the muddy waters again. And then it's comfortable because that's its nature. But you take a beautiful butterfly and it doesn't seek that kind of nature. It wants the sunlight. It wants the open breezes. It wants a beautiful flower to land upon. This is like the devotee of God. And so you see people who want a certain nature in this life. And their thoughts, their words, their behavior will tell you what they're really tuning their mind to. There is a very famous preacher at one time, Jimmy Swaggart, and he would preach very powerfully. And he kept a lot of people, they kept their attention. But in secret, he was going out and seeking out a prostitute, and he even disgusted the prostitute by asking to bring her daughter with her. And even the prostitute was disgusted by that. The prostitute had a more refined consciousness than he did. And so you see that. You see that the truth will come out eventually. But if you are sincere, if you are pure, even if you make a mistake, and people can make mistakes on the way up, but even if you make a mistake, you can turn away from that mistake. And you can put yourself right back on the path again. Some people don't have the humility to turn away from their mistakes, so they try to justify them. And that just prolongs the ignorance. We need to be humble in our approach to God. And if we make a mistake, and mistakes can be made, then we instantly, as soon as we recognize it as a mistake, we turn from it. And we get right back on the path to God again. And it is only in this way that we transcend the things of this world, that we make our way up the tree, that we taste the fruits of the tree. Now, when I came to the heart center, that is the first center that transcends the human sense. Until then, all the centers within the spine are all focused on a human being. Now, We can use, for instance, the third chakra, the chakra of will. And we can use it to try to do good things in this world. So it's not necessarily that any of these chakras are bad. In fact, at each stage of creation, God said, it is good. So there is a good aspect to each one of these chakras. But at the fourth chakra, for the first time, we go beyond ourselves. We transcend ourselves. We feel that divine love spreading out to all creation, all creation. And when that happened for me, I was on a hill up in Bellingham, meditating. I used to have a rock that I go to up there. And I could look out over the city at nighttime and see all of the lights there. And I spent many, many nights up on that rock, up on that hill. And this one night, finally, my heart center opened. I was with a great amount of pain. Great amount of pain. I thought I was just going to split wide open my whole body. But it was my heart center that was opening, and this divine love came out. And I had never experienced anything like it before. It was a tremendous outpouring of love, and not for any person or anything. It just flowed through me, and I felt like I was in an ocean in which it was all love, the air itself that I was breathing. It sounds to somebody who's not had it maybe like a psychotic experience, but it's not. It's the highest reality. And I felt that love in the air as if I was in an ocean of that love. And out it flowed. So it's both a static state and it was a dynamic state, both at the same time. It was a noun and it was a verb. And it was flowing through my heart and it was flowing out to all of creation. It was nighttime and there are trees and there are bushes. And I just felt this saturation of love in the trees and in the bushes. And in everything that I saw, it was in the air that I was breathing. It's a tremendous, tremendous experience. And it changed me, never to be the same again. And to one degree or another, that love has continued to flow through this heart. Now, at the time before that happened, I would have never told you that I was a bhakti. I would have much more thought of myself more on a mental path. But this changed my nature. It changed my life. It awakened me to God's nature of what divine love really is. And so that was the opening of this heart center. And then for years and years, it felt like a stone in my throat. And Mother talked about the seed coming up through the throat. And in her case, it came up, she coughed it up, and it came into her mouth. And it was a perfect Christ seed. And it was like the Eucharist. She described it as foam-like. And she broke it open, and the center was one perfect drop of blood. And this was the blood, body and the blood of Christ that came up out of her own body. Now, it came up to my throat center, and I tried to work it up through my mouth, but it never came in that same way. And eventually, it came back down into my body. And Mother said that not everybody has. In fact, it's a very rare experience to have what she had. So I had it, you can say, in a way, but it didn't come up into my mouth, and I didn't have that experience. But for years, it was in my throat center. And the throat center is a very interesting one because that's where there is the place of speech and truth of speech. It's also the place where you intuitively know higher truth and the truth of things. And so as it begins to open, so does your throat open. So does your ability to speak the truth. And this is an important center to open. And there is discernment that is there. It is different than your solar plexus. Down in your solar plexus, which is your John the Baptist, the moon within your own being, there you get a sense of yes or no, or of danger, or of something good is going on here. and it's not as refined as you get at the fifth center. And from the fifth center, you eventually transcend and you go up to the sixth center. This is the Christ center. And it comes in at the medulla, at the back of your head, the base of your skull. And it comes straight through into the brain as life force, as the sound vibration of Om. And at your ajna, it's reflected as the light vibration of the Christ consciousness or center. That is the gold and the blue and the silver star right within your own forehead. And you see them all there. And as you see these are the doorway into the kingdom of heaven. And you merge yourself into that light. And that light merges itself into you. And suddenly your whole being is lit up with that light. And one time I was meditating and my consciousness was transferred to the very base of the brain, looking upwards. And I saw this vast blue vault. It was the blue of Christ consciousness. And it had a definite curvature feeling to it. And yet at the same time, there is no limit, there is no end to this light. And it went as far as consciousness could expand into it. And that was right within my own being. And then there was a tremendous light, a white light that would light up through the whole brain. And so I would see that. And sometimes after meditating, I would turn off the light and lay down to go to sleep. I closed my eyes and I would see that light and I would think, oh, I left the lamp on. And I'd open my eyes to turn off the lamp, but the lamp was already off. And then I'd close my eyes and I would see this brilliant light within the cranium. These are actual experiences that you have on the way up. And it is wonderful, it's inspiring, but it's also purifying. But at every stage, at every step, you have these dual forces that are battling for your own consciousness, one wanting to take you up and the other wanting to take you back down. And that is where we must remain pure throughout our entire sadhana. We must keep our consciousness on the highest. And if we don't, and we have free will, we can choose. But it takes us down. And as we go down, we lose what we had gained. And at first it's subtle, it seems like we're all right. But gradually we fall into a darker and darker state of consciousness. And then we realized, I have lost what I had. And for some people, it just recedes into the background and it's like a dream they once dreamed. And it's no more a living reality and they lose touch with it. Because their own human nature is taken over. And they just go out and they live what you kind of think is a normal human life after that, and they seem to be content with it. And yet before that, they had such tremendous experiences in God. And you think, how is that possible? How is it possible to be lifted up so high and then seemingly just go and turn in the opposite direction? And yet it happens. And it teaches us, if we're paying attention to it, that if we are going to truly make spiritual progress in this lifetime, we must keep our intention pure. We must keep our mind focused upon God above all other things. We live in this world, but not of this world. And we don't do one God's blessed thing if it is not God's will. And God can test us. There is a disciple of Master's, and Master said, when you give a talk, turn it all over to him and let him speak through you. And he got up before a group and nothing came out. And he thought, well, if God's not going to do it, I guess I'm going to have to do it. And so he did his best to give a good talk. But that's not what Master had instructed. If God doesn't say anything, then don't say anything. And let God take care of it. If God doesn't want something to succeed in your life, then perhaps that's what's best for you. Papa talked about Anandashram. And he said, I don't want there to be any savings accounts. I don't want there to be any foundations or anything like that. It has to support itself. And every year we start brand new. Zero amount in the bank account. And if God intends it to be successful, it will be. And if God withdraws his support from it, then no amount of human scrambling will make it right. And you know, it really makes you alive. What if God were to command you, give away every cent that you have? Would you hesitate to do it? Is there something in you that says, well, what about? And you would just start listing all of the things. Or would you just say, okay, God, you're taking me on a new adventure. Let's do that then. And you give away every cent that you have and you go out and you absolutely and totally depend upon him. Through every step of the way. You see, we can be tested that way. Now, not everybody is tested in the same ways because not everybody has the same kinds of things that they're hanging on to. But we have to be ready in our heart and in our soul. If that is what you will for me, thy will be done. And when we live our life that way, we ascend up that tree of consciousness, up the spine. We return back into those primeval roots that come directly from God consciousness, into the source of our own being. We live and we breathe. We can't even take a breath without that life energy from God coming directly to us. Krishna said, you can forget me, but if I forget you for even a blink of an eye, you cease to exist. And you know it's true. When we think of God, we get access to everything that God is. And if you think that you have total security, then what do you need with things of the world if God chooses to withdraw them from you? And what if he chooses to withdraw your breath from you? And that's the last breath you'll breathe in this lifetime. But you do it in full and total consciousness of God. And with that last breath, you ascend up directly into God consciousness. Do you think that you'll look back with any regret that you dropped this body? You'll think, thank God, I'm finally free of that heavy overcoat. It's like a lead overcoat. And now I'm free of it. And I'm free in the consciousness of God. Glory, hallelujah. It's really true, you know. There's nothing to be afraid of in leaving this body other than not fulfilling God's will for us while we're here. That's the only thing that we need be concerned about. Have I done everything that God intended me to do in my lifetime here? And if I have, and I breathe that last breath, and I can say, it is good. Just as God said in his creation, it is good. And God withdraws me back into himself, into his being, into his bliss, into his love, and into his light. You know, going totally into God doesn't mean we lose anything. We gain everything because we are merged in him, and he is everything that is and beyond. How little our conceptions are of what God is. How we have imprisoned the idea of God in small ideas that do not reflect the greatness of what God is. whatever wonderful scientific concepts or mathematical computations there can be, God is much more than any of those. Whatever beautiful poetry there is, or wonderful movies that there are, anything in this world, God is greater than any of that. He's the creator of that. They are just tiny little expressions of the intelligence and the power and the light of God. So break God out of the prison of your own thinking. When you sit down to meditate, open yourself to eternity. God, what do you have for me in this moment? And don't relegate yourself to a small and insignificant God, but put your mind upon a magnificent, mysterious, unknowable God, in the sense that you cannot know everything because it is infinite, but very knowable in the sense that you can have that intimate knowledge of Him and your oneness with Him. This is the tree of life in you. And that the leaves that are on your branches will vibrate with the subtlest and most powerful and the most uplifting vibrations you can imagine. Have you ever noticed how leaves on a tree can be like laughter or like clapping? And it's nature's way of applauding God on this most tremendous day that He has created. And that the leaves inside of you, on the limbs of your branches, can resonate with the power and the rhythm and the beauty of God. And it can applaud God's greatness that's being expressed right through your own being. You see, you don't have to go anywhere. It can be wonderful to go on pilgrimage when He directs you to. But there's nothing magical about changing places. If He takes you to places and you feel the uplifting power and the purity there, all the better. But you know what? It exists right inside of you. You have ancient temples right inside of you. You have the Vedas being recited right inside of you. You have Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, Rama, all right inside of you. You have the power and the everythingness of God right inside of you. One time God took me to the center of my spine. And in the center of my spine, I saw the entire universe. There. Imagine. And it didn't seem crowded at all. It seemed to fit perfectly comfortably there. You have that inside of you. So learn to this about this tree of life that is inside of you. Learn about these beautiful leaves of the causal and the astral as they vibrate inside of you. The beauty of it, the bliss of it, the light of it. And you will see that this world is just but a vague expression of that beauty, of that light, of that bliss. And that you have it right within you, and that you can have it continuously and at all times. What a promise. The gospel means the good news. What better news could there possibly be than that promise and the fulfillment of that? So with all love, all joy, all bliss, I pronoun to you. I pronoun to the great God that is inside of you. I pray that the great God inside of each one of us awakens Himself, that He transcends all the things of time and space, and that you might experience Him face to face. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. been so lovely to be with you. And I hope to make this a regular visit.
Thank you, David.
My great joy, Peter. And to the Bellingham group as well. Om Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai.